going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment, where your questions and comments matter. At 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810.
Welcome back to the Daily Drama on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Now, last night, as we kicked off our week-long career boot camp series, we talked about establishing strategic relationships and alliances on the job. Well, tonight, we're talking about something much more foundational. Who do you trust on the job? And how does that impact the work that you're doing and your career down the road? Well, joining me to talk about this very important issue are Robert Pierre, former editor with the Washington Post and president of Bald Cypress Media, and Dr. Brent Smith, who we will get back on the line. He is an associate professor of marketing at St. Joseph University in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. And please don't forget that tomorrow is the big, big day. We have a live broadcast for our career boot camp. It is coming up at the City Winery. Of course, that's formerly Love Nightclub. That's 1350 Oakey Street Northeast, where we will hear from the best and brightest minds in career development. They're going to share their thoughts and some insight. Please register at WHUR.com, and certainly we will look forward to seeing you there. Robert, good to see you. How you doing?
I'm well. How are you today?
I'm doing just fine, man. I really appreciate you coming in. Let's talk a little bit about trust as it relates to the job and the career, whether it's blue collar, pink collar, white collar, private industry, government, it doesn't matter. How do you define trust?
Well, I think that goes to the heart of it. I mean, when I define trust in a workplace, I do air quotes around it. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, the question you have to ask yourself, why are you trusting someone and what are you trusting them with? This is not your brother, your sister, your mother, where you're trusting them with your innermost secrets. You're trusting them with things to get a particular job done. And I think that some people misunderstand that portion of it. And so they get caught up. I don't trust anyone, which doesn't really get you anywhere, because if you're in this workplace, you've got to deal with someone. You got to trust that someone's going to get their piece of the job done, or at least start off in a place where you say, how can we get to a place that helps us get our jobs done?
It's interesting, because one of the things that, as I mentioned, we were discussing last night was strategic relationships or strategic alliances. Dr. Smith, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Thank you so much, because I'm going to jump right in with a question for you. As a professor of marketing in the business school at St. Joseph's, what is the difference between trust and a strategic relationship or alliance on the job?
Well, I suppose I might approach that question as follows. So trust essentially involves you giving up some of your agency, right, for the advancement or the protection of your own interests. Sometimes I say with trust, you're hoping for someone to protect your interests or to project them in the absence of your presence, right? When you are thinking in strategic terms or alliance terms, the trust may form on a different set of bases. It might be something that is very explicit, more contractually based, perhaps, right? Not so much that there's a written paper, that there's a contract per se. However, there may be more professional economic interests at play, such that people are informed by enlightened self-interest, right? Not necessarily advancing your own interest. So part of what you are trying to establish trust around is that we are effectively being saved by the same net, if you would, right? To use the trapeze maybe as a metaphor.
Your thoughts about that, Robert?
No. It was interesting when you said giving up your own agency, because that's difficult to do, because all of us want to say, I want to be in control of my own destiny, right? I mean, that's the thing that you deal with. And it's a fundamental misunderstanding of how work happens, because when I was both in management and a union rep, and you know, head of the union at the post, and so we dealt with issues from both those perspectives, and almost all of them came from, you know, there were time and, you know, attendance issues, but almost all of them came from is this person working in my best interest? And the answer to that is almost always no, because the institution is working in its own interest to save itself and to foster itself. And I think that is the root of where the sort of issues about trust come from. It's like, is this institution working for me? And you have to figure out how to make it work for you, but that's not the goal.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Of course, we are taking a week long look at your career, where you are, how you can move through it, how you can move up. And tonight we're talking about trust on the job. Who do you trust? How do you know? Give us a call if you have a question or a comment about establishing or dealing with trust issues on the job. Let me bring it back to Robert, because you said something I thought was really kind of interesting. Okay, you were management, but you were also a union official representing basically the rank and file. So if I'm walking down the hallway and I say, hi, who am I speaking to?
Well, at different points.
Yeah.
I was at different points, because at one point, when I was in management, you couldn't be in the union.
Okay.
So, I mean, but no, and in the cases when I was a union rep, I was the person who was, the person who, whenever there was a grievance, I was the person who had to say, okay, are we going to spend union resources to manage, to help this person? And most of the time the answer was yes, but how were you going to manage those resources? And so people would come to you in confidence. And so they had to be a trust relationship there, that I'm not going to take very personal data in some cases and use it and tell someone else, because sometimes someone is telling you actually all of their business. There might be an inappropriate relationship. There might be any of a number of things that have occurred that now have to be adjudicated through this process. And in that case, most employees, you sort of have to give up some level of trust, because you don't have the money to fight the institution, but that's why you pay into a union or there is a union to represent you. And so in that case, it was easier to get people to sort of say, I'm going to trust you, and to say what gets said here stays here.
How do you establish trust, Dr. Smith, when you are perhaps new on the job and just dealing with some of those fundamental issues? And is it different for people of color on the job than perhaps others in the workplace?
All right. Well, excellent question. Well, in terms of developing trust, one might imagine that it probably starts with a seed of sorts, and it grows and it blossoms. And for the different kinds of relationships one may have in the workplace, they may blossom differently. I would also go on to say that as we manage relationships, we also need to, if you would, prune, right, those relationships, because they will evolve, some will end for whatever reason. And each of those factors, that evolution, that ending, impacts the comfort we have in giving trust to others with whom we work. If we're new to an organization, especially if we are ethnic, racial, gender minority to an organization, we may proceed rather slowly. We tend to be very safe about relationship formation in terms of, with whom we share our business, with whom we share our aspirations. That's part of the reason, sometimes we encounter certain obstacles, be they ceilings or of the variety of that, because we have a difficult time handing over some of that agency to someone else who maybe can advance our interests in places that we cannot. Places we'd like to work, but we're not quite there yet. I might also add that, it's really important. You asked a question earlier about being strategic, right? And I would really combine behavior and trust as follows. There are many varieties of trust, but three important ones would really include what we call benevolent trust. That's the altruism. Find out who's generally looking out for you. Credible trust. Who has that reliable expertise and insight that can actually help you in your interest? And then maybe thirdly, competent trust. Who has the ability, the action, the results that can actually help you? So it's very different than just thinking, I can trust someone with my secrets. That is but maybe one type, one variety of trust, but there are so many others.
Okay.
When you're thinking about your career and the trajectory, right, you've got to have able, capable, credible people.
Okay. Let me go to the phone lines real quick. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about who do you trust on your job? How do you know who to trust? And what are some of the things that you need to understand about the importance of trust on the job? Let's talk to, I believe it's, is this Katie? Katie calling from Maryland?
Yes.
Yes. Hi, Katie. What's on your mind?
Yes, I wanted to know, what do you do in a situation where you're in a pigeonhole on your job and you know the business, you know the industry, the company that you're in just as well as anyone else, you know, because of time and tenure. And, you know, like myself, I had the opportunity to work in several departments within 7 years that I've been with the company, but yet I, you know, just kind of feel pigeonholed. What do you do in a situation like that?
I guess my question, though, Katie, is what might that have? What part do you believe trust may play in you leaving your job, if at all?
Well, that's a good question. Well, I think trust is a two-way thing. It's a two-way street. You know, it's your employer, your boss believing in you, your ability to bring fresh and new ideas to the company, your ability to perform your job. You know, it's a two-way thing.
Let me see what Robert has to say about that.
So I would ask a question as well. I mean, is you want to stay at the company? Is that that's the first question?
I like it because it really affords me an incredible work-life balance.
Right. And so I think that there are sometimes trade-offs for that because, you know, these institutions, I mean, you're dealing with other people in the institution. Other people want to move up. And I think when you start talking about work-life balance, one of the things that these institutions try to do is they try not to have you have work for less. Sometimes they tend towards people who are workaholics or something like that. If there's not the right culture in the institution. And so what I would say is that if you've clearly thought about this, you have to figure out if you've decided you want to stay and say, what are some other ways, the things that I haven't tried to do, whether that be something else in another department. You said you worked in lots of departments, but figure out something that you haven't done that's possible that might make you happier at the institution and not expect anyone else to sort of help you figure it out.
Thank you, Katie. I appreciate your question. I will say on Friday, we are going to do an entire show as it relates to this career boot camp series that we're doing related to how do you know when it's time to stay or go, moving out of that job. And so I certainly invite you to tune in on Friday as well as we address that. Not to mention, you may get some answers tomorrow if you attend the event tomorrow, starting at 7, the live broadcast. So certainly you can... I beg your pardon. Go right ahead.
I was going to say, may I offer a comment to the caller?
Sure.
I think it's important also for the caller to, you know, maybe just kind of self-reflect and ask that honest question. Have there been people in the organization that I have trusted enough, maybe that have been my managers or that have been in higher positions that could affect my progression, my promotion, my sustained work-life balance? Sometimes, you know, we don't have those conversations, and as a result, people don't really know what we want, right? So it might be compensation, it might be the promotion, and in the absence of the conversations about, you know, hey, here's what I'd like to be doing in the next 3 to 5 years, we end up moving around a lot, and it may not be as fulfilling, but that might be evidence of, you know, the need to find someone you trust.
Katie, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Does gender play a role in how individuals feel about trust, Dr. Smith? For example, do men feel more comfortable with women bosses or more comfortable with men bosses? Your thoughts on what role gender plays?
I generally, the research shows that men generally feel more control over their agency, whether they retain it entirely or whether they pass over some of it, such that they are not as anxious, not as worried about whether handing trust over to someone else will affect their ability to succeed. Generally, the research shows that women are more cautious, for good reason.
Hold that point, Dr. Smith, hold that point, because I want to drill down on that a little bit more. But please stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue as we continue our week-long career boot camp series. And please, of course, do not forget, if you want to attend, and we certainly invite you to do so, our live broadcast on Career Boot Camp. It's tomorrow at 7 o'clock. Get there early at the City Winery, 1350 Oakey Street Northeast. That's the former Love Nightclub. Don't forget, you need to register online at WHUR.com. Please stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on 96.3 WHUR. More of this conversation in just a bit.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.xm Channel 142, HBCU and Sirius XM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we are examining this question: who do you trust on the job, and how does trust impact the work that you're doing as well as your career moving forward? My guests are Robert Pierre, former editor with the Washington Post and president of Bald Cypress Media, and Dr. Brent Smith, associate professor of marketing at St. Joseph University in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let's continue from before the break. Your thoughts, Robert, about what part gender may play in trust on the job.
Yeah, and Dr. Smith, he obviously knows more about what the research shows, but just anecdotally where I've worked, I mean, there does seem to be a gender where men are more comfortable with men, and actually men just feel like they retain a lot more of their agency to be able to sort of take risk. Regardless of whether the boss is male or female, at least that's been my experience in the workplace. That ought not be the case, but.
Interesting. Dr. Smith, do you think it really does matter? I mean, I'll tell you, I don't care. I've had women bosses. I've had men bosses. I've had bad bosses that were men. I've had bad bosses that were women. I could not measure the level of bad no matter what, and it just really didn't matter to me. Your thoughts about that, Dr. Smith?
Well I think you know, for men approaching this, again, you know, going back to what my fellow panelists said, generally men are willing to take more of a risk because I think ultimately men do not feel like they're giving up that much agency, whether their boss or colleague be a man or a woman, right? I think that when we look honestly at some of the work-life balance issues, such as raised by our earlier caller, when it's coming to issues of, you know, women with children or who are pregnant, when they're experiencing some career transition, they need to care for an elder, like a parent, it can be very difficult to have those conversations with the manager who may not come across as very empathetic or who maybe does not have a similar experience in their own life. So as was noted earlier, you know, some organizations really want you to focus so heavily on work, they're not so concerned about your balance. And in the when a woman does not perceive that, she's not as comfortable having such conversations.
Interesting. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let's go to L. L calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, L. What's on your mind?
Hey, what's happening?
Hey.
I wanted to kind of touch on that first subject that you was talking about like who you can trust.
Yes.
I'm going to comment on both of them, but...
But that's what we're talking about tonight.
Okay.
Who you can trust. How do you know?
Subject, first subject, how do you know who you can trust? That, in my opinion, from my experience, I've been on my job for 9 years now. And it's all about who you know from your job. As far as, because not too long ago, we just had a big issue come up where, I guess you could call it tattletelling or snitching or whatever, but... It was one of the, I think it was because of jealousy, because I drive trucks for a living. So, like, in my career status, I'm kind of like, I have a lot of people in front of me, and it's always a seniority thing. So, the older drivers might get a little more time than the newer drivers. So... You know who you can trust and who you, as far as if you know them, how long you have been there with that individual. As far as women on the job, men do not trust women bosses, no.
Why do you say that, Al?
Because I think it's kind of like a manly thing, like a superior type thing, you know, like. Some people feel like me personally. I don't have a problem with it.
Of course, you know? Not. It's not. It's not you. It's all the other men, right?
It's the other ones, right?
Some people, some men, some males have like a ego thing, and they feel like they don't have to answer to a woman. You understand what I'm saying? And then, two, like I drive trucks, like. Some females who come in there and they take over as your supervisor, they've never done your job a day in their life. Mm. So they can't relate to what we do. So, yeah, that's kind of like a big issue in certain workplaces. I don't know about the white collar, but with blue collar work, definitely. We have that problem all the time.
Okay, thank you. Robert, you were shaking your head. What was going through your mind?
I get it. But the last issue that the caller brought up, there are men who have not done your job, who are bosses, who don't get challenged the same way as some women. I get that. But we ought to be able to challenge them in the same way because... You know, what your issues are at a man just don't want to speak, don't want to have a woman tell him what to do. Well, it's like maybe you need to get another job. I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying, you know, that. I mean, in today's society, that don't fly anymore.
Yeah, I was about to say, I don't understand what Elle is saying. I'm going to be honest with you.
We understand where it's coming from, but we don't necessarily understand that it's...
Maybe I see where he's coming from. I just don't agree.
We don't agree.
Yeah, with I think it's 2018. I think we need to understand that we see women doctors and women truck drivers. We see male nurses and flight attendants.
Yeah.
To be fair,
if I may jump in for a moment. There is something to be said for the fact that people generally have more trust/respect for folks who have done their kind of work before. And so the labor data do still show that there are still gender disparities in certain kinds of work and certain positions within certain sectors. So maybe owing to the fact that people are not as familiar right, with seeing someone in certain positions in certain industries, that might say, well, that's so unfamiliar to me, I'm not sure that I can trust it. And so it's probably more that than it is gender.
Okay. Joining us now is Deborah T. Owen. She's founder and CEO of Corporate Alley Cat, our partner during the course of this discussion. And she came in at really the right time. when we're talking, talking about women, just don't throw any water bottles at any of the men, including Elle. By the way, Elle, thank you so much for joining us. I'm going to let you listen, but I'm going to protect you with a strategic alliance so that you don't get a woman calling you out of your name. But, and she's not going to do that. Go right ahead, Deborah. Your thoughts about what Elle was saying.
Hey, Elle, how are you doing? So listen, what I heard that jumped out at me was the word superior, that men might feel a little superior. So, of course, I don't agree with that. But one of the things I will say is that does someone have to do your job before you can give them the respect and the partnership as your leader? And one of the things that I think people forget when it comes to trust is you may not trust that woman boss, or you may not trust that male coworker, but guess what? They know that. And so do I want somebody on my team who I know doesn't trust me? No. So while you're not trusting that person, you're not extending that trust, that person's going to feel uncomfortable trusting you. So Elle, you know, if there's an opportunity for me to move somebody around, I may not go to Elle because I don't trust Elle. And I know Elle doesn't trust me, and I don't know if he would support me with the other male drivers.
Well, with that said, when you're talking about the gender issue, and this is just my personal feeling, I don't care if you are male or female. I just want you to know that you know what you're doing. And I want to know that you are competent and a good decision maker. Beyond that, I don't care.
Harold, you may not care.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of people out there, and I'm going to just speak for the African American women out there who are leading organizations and leading teams. We are, to Robert's point, oftentimes challenged in a different way.
Definitely.
You know, we don't get the same automatic buy-in that our white male or other male partners may receive. So that does exist, and that is real. But understand, if you're not offering trust to other people, it's hard. They know that, right? It's not like it's a secret. I know you don't trust me, and I'm going to act accordingly as well. So that ties into the conversation we had yesterday about the relationships. You can't build this two-way relationship if I know you don't trust me.
Mm-hmm. What are the negative impacts of a untrusting relationship, work relationship, Robert?
It limits your opportunities. I mean, that's at the end of the day, because I'll give you an example. When I was a reporter, middle senior reporter, I'd been at the Post 10 or 15 years by that time, and a senior editor came up to me. I was in a position, I wanted to be a national correspondent, and I was, you know, covering a fairly significant beat at the paper. But one of the senior editors came up to me and says, if you don't think you're getting the right run.
What does that mean?
For a story. Like if you think a story that's going to be on B1, this was when it mattered when people read a physical
page. Above the fold on the front page. Okay, yeah.
And he said,
telling your age, Robert.
I was going to say, you're aging yourself.
he said, I want you
Thank
to
you
do
for
something.
That breakdown.
And it was a he. He said, I want you to go around the system. I want you to go around your editor. I want you to send me a note, and I will go and happen to find this story. Three out of four times I did that, I think that story ended up on the front page. And that ended up getting me where I needed to be. But I had to trust that going around the system, because there are formal and informal rules. And he said, people do this all the time. I didn't know that because no one had told me. And so by knowing that and by only using it sparingly, I was now going around my superiors to get to somebody else who said, oh, I'm going to go over your head. But he didn't tell the boss that he had done it. I didn't tell anybody. But I had to trust that he wasn't going to say, oh, you know, Robert came to me with this story.
So Dr. Smith, to a point that we were discussing earlier, often culture, historic culture, not only as it relates to race or gender, but just the way an office happens to be set up. You could work for a large organization. It could be corporate government, as I always say, blue collar, pink collar, white collar, but you may have a lot of rank and file employees that almost immediately walk in the door giving management the side eye? Why is that? And how can managers engender trust with the rank and file?
Well, this really goes back to, you know, to the comments the other panelists have made. But, you know, essentially when, you know, a seasoned manager or a capable manager takes the time to say, you know, the best relationships are the ones where we kind of co-create a set of expectations. We communicate with each other. I trust you enough. I value you enough to hear what you have to say, especially your ideas. So I'm saying that from the perspective of a marketer. Okay, you know, we're at an age today where the firms that innovate rather quickly, that fail fast, and that learn from as many people as possible, regardless of what they look like, okay, they tend to be the more market-driving organizations versus the market-driven organizations, those in the back seat. And so managers who effectively have their eye on the prize say, you know, we're here to succeed. Right? And if you step on the ship and you are ready to make a team contribution, there'll be opportunities for you to follow. And, you know, when we see fit, there may be opportunities for you to lead, perhaps not as a manager, but a small project or something. And so you've got to show people that you're willing to give them that trust, perhaps in their talents, right, in their ability to make some kind of meaningful contribution, however small, but still significant. I think that's encouraging for the newer onboarded employee. I would argue that's also very important for the millennial generation today, right? I advise a lot of companies, Fortune 150s, that really still struggle with how to onboard, how to manage, how to work with, how to inspire their millennial employees. And it's probably, we're seeing a lot of cases where, you know, they are their own version of Hidden Figures, if you would, right? Where they may be among the rank and file, but they think very differently. They think very innovatively, but they get maybe missed, overlooked, ignored.
Okay? And yeah, because they're so because they're so young and new to the this specific workforce and career role. I need to take a break. When we come back, more of this conversation as we continue our week. Long look at moving through your career, moving up in your career. It's Career Boot Camp. We'll be back. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our conversation as we take a week-long look at Career Boot Camp. Not only staying on the job, not only surviving on the job, but thriving on the job, being upwardly mobile, no matter where you work, whether it's a private company, in the government, federal or otherwise, or you know, maybe you work for a small business, but it's all the same relationships, trust, all of those things we are discussing during the course of this week. Deborah, you wanted to make a comment about this issue before the break. Please go right ahead.
Yeah, Harold, I just want to jump in and ask Robert and Brent a question about trust. How do you repair trust when you have a relationship in the workplace? And I know you don't trust me and I don't trust you, but we have to work together. Or there's been a breach of trust. Can either one of our guests here give us an idea of what are some things we can do, conversations we can have to begin repairing that trust and turn that relationship around?
Robert, you first.
Okay.
So what I would say is that you have to get out of your feelings. I mean, that's the first thing is you have to say, why am I here? What's my why? The why might be I got a wife and kids at home. Your why might be a lot of things. What's my why? And then do we still have to work together? Because in some cases you can push for a move, but you have to be willing to reach out and to say, okay, let me calm down for a second, get it, you know, like I said, get out of your feelings and just say, what really is my issue? And figure out what your issue is. Cause if it's just that you got your feelings hurt, you say, okay, you got to get over that because we still got work to do. And then you say, once you realize what your issue are, you say, and now how do I get to solve that issue?
But doesn't that also depend on who broke the trust?
Yes, it does. I'll tell you. I'll go back to this as me as an employer now, as somebody who hires folks and, you know, either contractors or others. It's very difficult for me. I don't always have time to fix it because you're small. You got this many contracts. You don't have, you know, there's not 20 redundancies. And so you don't have, so I will say, I will give you one of the things that small businesses do. And one of my mentors in the business have said, slow to hire, quick to fire, because you don't have time. If you're trying to innovate, you're trying to do other things. Now, that's different for a bigger organization. And so it's not really about in that case. It's like I gave you because I'm going to give you a lot of rope as a small business. You give people a lot of rope because you say, I need you to be able to do this job. But if you can't do it, you know, if it's a skills issue, then I might be able to help you with the skills issue. But if it's a trust issue, I'm not sure how much I'm going to work on a trust issue as a small business owner.
What do you think, Dr. Smith?
I'm going to come at this from the angle of someone with some familiarity with, you know, government employees, employees in higher education, athletes, and I think a lot of just, you know, folks out there, blue collar, white collar, whatever. There's something to be said for directly acknowledging that there has been a breach of trust, a failure of trust, a loss of trust. And just say, hey, you know what? There's clearly been a loss of trust between us. Let's just sit down and you tell me what your issue might be with me. And, you know, I'll try to do the same with you. But ultimately, we have to own our part in it because we got here, right? There's something that I did or did not do, something you did or did not do. But ultimately, I'd like us to move forward because we have to be able to trust each other. There are some organizations where no one is going to get fired anytime soon. That's just the truth. Mm-hmm. And people are going to have to learn to work together. So I would advise, where possible, directly acknowledge it, take ownership of it. As Robert mentioned, get out of your feelings. And be more committed to moving forward. You cannot change the past per se, but you could maybe change your attitude about the past and what got you there so you can move onward and upward.
Here's now, for the most part, we've been talking about trust issues between individuals. But what happens if, and this is for Deborah, and you all are certainly able to chime in, what happens when there is a wholesale crisis of trust? If your organization is accused of malfeasance and it's not just one individual, but there are perhaps a group of individuals spread over a huge organization, we could use the school system crisis that's not just here, mm-hmm. but we've seen in other parts of the country where teachers are accused of perhaps changing grades or getting or awarding or administrators awarding diplomas that students did not earn. If you are the person who's on the up and up, but how do you walk into an organization every day looking over your shoulder?
That actually happens a lot where you're in an environment where you can't trust anyone. And people have shown you that. And so what I would say is, one, you got to document, right? When these types of things are going on, people know. People know who's doing this and who's suspected of doing that because people talk. So if you know that, then you have to protect yourself. So one of the ways I always do it is I document everything. Harold, you and I have a conversation. When I get back to my desk, I'm going to document it. There are some people in the workplace who I only had email conversations with because I couldn't trust them. And I knew I would have to protect myself. So when you know, then you have to go into that position of kind of keeping yourself out of that. And part of it, too, is the people you associate with. Now, if you know there's a group of people over at the Post and they're doing some things, and who knows what they're doing at the Post, and you're
they're
hanging
doing fake news over there.
They're doing fake news that's over there. And every time I look up, you are hanging with those people. Guess what? You are part of that group. I'm going to associate you with that group of people. I'm going to make the assumption that you're doing the same things they're doing. If you don't want to be aligned with those people, then you need to be very cognizant of that. That doesn't mean you can't interact with them or work with them, but you want to keep a distance, a safe distance, so that you're able to maintain your independence and people will know they're not part of this group. But you've got to document, you've got to have those tough conversations with people, and you've got to have your own set of boundaries.
Mm-hmm. Robert, your thoughts about that?
Yeah, no, I can give you an example of that where there was a supervisor many years ago where I realized that what they would tell me and what they would tell other people was not the same. And so I began documenting every email, every internal message that I got sent. I kept it, and it came in useful because I got a bad review. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm like, what? You know, like, I mean, not that I can't get one, but I went back and I had saved everything, and I say, well, here's what the expectations were. Here's what we agreed to. I got it turned. I got the entire thing thrown out. The entire review, because I had the documentation, because I realized that I couldn't trust a person. And that's unusual, because, you know, you don't get a review change. The entire thing changed from negative to glowing. But unfortunately, there just are some unscrupulous people, and you have to deal with them that way.
Right. And those situations are very possible, right? And I just want to say something real quickly about documentation, because it is so important. If I say that 3 times a day, and you know what people always say? I didn't have time to document. Well, I did. I mean, I scribbled down some notes. That is not documentation. Harold, when I went through a discrimination situation at work, I started documenting. And when I felt like I couldn't take it enough, I gathered my documentation, I put it together, and I sent it to the president of the company. Within a week, he responded, and my situation was over. And it was only because I had the documentation. So if people have shown you who they are, and they've shown you that I can't trust you, that my word is no good, shame on you if you are not documenting and if you are not having those tough conversations. Because things like that, people's characters don't change overnight. It's not going to go away. It's just going to be worse. And if you're in a position of having the least amount of power, you are the one who's vulnerable in that situation.
Right. Dr. Smith, I'll let you have a last word. Go right ahead.
All right, sure. Well, I would truly echo what Deborah said about documentation. I think, you know, in whatever work situation you find yourself in, documentation is a good habit, right? And excellence is a habit. You want to start documenting really anything that is of significance, be it, you know, something good, something potentially unfavorable. I would also add that, you know, if possible, try to leave the organization. But if that's not possible, again, document, but also make it clear to people that you have your own character. And mm-hmm. so you make sure that they understand how you are going to work with them, mm-hmm. that you are going to follow maybe the letter of your job description, and then you can tell them some way personally, you know, there are some things I just won't do, right? I kind of have established my line, and I'm not going to cross it. Now, that doesn't mean I'm going to tattletale on folks. I'm going to make everything difficult for you. But, you know, this job matters to me. But there are just some activities I will not participate in. Right? And they'll learn that from you, especially if they know that you keep yourself separate and apart from some of that, you know, dirty, immoral business. And you seem to pay attention to detail. Because paying attention to detail would probably intimate to them that you do document stuff.
Well, I think that's a good way to end this conversation for today. But I do want to thank Dr. Brent Smith, as well as Robert Pierre, and of course, Deborah Owens with Corporate Alley Cat. And don't forget, tomorrow is the day. Please join us live for our career boot camp broadcast at the City Winery, formerly Love Nightclub, at 1350 Oakey Street Northeast. Get there early. We start at 7, but you may want to get there a little bit early because you're going to have a lot of people there engaging with some of the best and brightest minds in career development. And don't forget to register online at whur.com. SiriusXM.com. That is the Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141 for this Tuesday, June 26th. I'm Harold Fisher. You can tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Now, stay tuned for the connection with Lorna.